welcome to the Talk with Tori podcast. I'm your host, Tori Jones, and I'm so glad that you're here. It's time to have some fun. On each episode, I will chat with a friend and we will share random life topics, tips and tricks, fun stories, and more serious stories filled with some real talk to make you laugh, maybe cry, make you think, but most of all, bring a smile to your face. We all have a story to share, so I hope you enjoyed this one. So grab your favorite Starbucks, a glass of wine, water, I don't care, you do you, girl, because it's time to peel back the layers and add a little spice to it. Hey, Will.
Hey, Tori, how's it going?
All right. Well, I'm so glad that you're here in Auburn. How long has it been since I've seen you in person?
Probably a couple of years, right?
Yeah, because I used to see football season,
right?
But we didn't have a football season. And you know what I actually just saw? I hadn't even thought about this, but I knew I was interviewing you, and Marla posted a memory that y'all went to the Final Four.
She did. Yeah, that was a painful memory to see a couple of days ago, knowing that we were so close to making the national championship.
I remember I almost went on that trip with y'all, but I was like, it was so fun being in Auburn and rolling the trees and everything. That was one of my favorite Auburn memories. But y'all, I'm so excited today on Talk with Tori to have Will Gibson. You're actually the first guy guest without someone else that isn't Josh, my husband.
I was curious about that. I looked through some of your previous podcasts.
And yes, yes. I've had like some husband and wives or like things like that. But that's it. So this is exciting. Well, y'all, I'm really excited to have Will today on the podcast. I knew him because I was technically one of his bosses when he did Camp War Eagle, and then he was promoted to head counselor. So we got to work together. He heard about all my shenanigans. Y'all know my crazy life that I live. And so now I won't introduce you. I'll let them tell you kind of where your life is now and a little bit about you. And then y'all, he has just such a powerful story that we were just talking that I told him, you know, there's purpose in the pain and it's up to you how you use it. And I feel like you've really championed it to be able to be open and share it with other people. And that's just something I admire about you. So I can't wait for y'all to learn about his story. So Will, will you tell us a little bit about you?
Sure. So Tori, first off, I really appreciate you having me on.
Yay.
It's good to see you. It's been way too long.
I know. I was so glad we could do it in person.
Yeah. It's great to be back and see you again, be back in Auburn. It's always good to be back here. Just a little bit about myself. As Tori said, my name is Will Gibson. I am originally from a small town outside of Nashville called Old Hickory, Tennessee. I grew up pretty much an Auburn fan my entire life. My brother was the first in my family to go to college, and he graduated in 2004, so just a little bit
so
before
y'all are from
I started.
Partners.
Yes, yes. I didn't start till 2012, so we're 8 or 9 years apart.
So you were young when all in at a young age.
Exactly, exactly. So pretty significant difference. I should say 8 or 9 years between when he graduated and I started. We're 12 years of difference in age, so it's a pretty significant
wow.
age gap. But growing up, I wanted to be just like Big Brother, mm-hmm. and I went to a really small school, graduated 40 people, which at the time was the largest class in my school's history, and no one really went out of state, but I knew from a young age that Auburn was just where wow. I wanted to be, and I had another friend that I graduated with that had parents that went to Auburn as well, and so him and I from 5th or 6th grade were talking about going to Auburn one day together, and ultimately that ended up happening, and so
he came.
He did. We lived together our first 3 years at Auburn.
Oh my gosh.
We're still really good friends today. We talk on a pretty regular
basis.
That's amazing. So I got to Auburn, studied industrial system engineering, and then graduated in 2016. From there, I moved to Atlanta, where I've been for the past 4.5, almost 5 years now. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. I think I've been out of college longer than I was in college, but
isn't that a weird feeling?
It is. It is. I remember there's just certain milestones you hit in your life. And as you hit them, you kind of reflect back and think, mm-hmm. that's kind of crazy. And that was when I hit where I'd been out of college long in it, because I think every stage of your life just feels faster than the previous one. Mm-hmm. When you think about your time in college, you think that went so quick. And now 5 years have passed in the real world. And it, you know, here we are. So
yeah, that's so crazy. Well, it's really crazy because I've been in Auburn for 7 years. 7 years in May. So when this airs, I'll be here 7 years. And the craziest part is I met you 7 years ago. And how it's just like 7 years, so much life happens in 7 years. So, I mean, I didn't know Josh 7 years ago. And y'all probably saw me dancing with plenty of other boys 7 years ago. So, you know, but do you have any funny stories or fun facts or anything you kind of want to share with the people?
Yeah, I think when I think about my high school experience, it was really great to have gone to such a small school where everybody knew everybody, but that quickly became a con when something embarrassing happened. And my freshman year of high school, we were at the end of a spring semester, maybe whatever you wanted to call it in school. And my friends thought it'd be a funny idea to put a full cake in my seat out after one of my classes, which I promptly sat in and had to walk around.
You didn't see it.
Oh, I had no idea. Sat on a full chocolate cake, and then the rest of the day had to walk around school with just chocolate cake all over my pants. And I think that was probably the most embarrassing.
If you went to a small school, we're probably in 3 minutes the whole school knew.
Oh, yes. Yeah. If they didn't see it, they probably texted their friends about it. So, yes, that was one I never quite lived down. I mean, my senior year of high school, they were still talking about that moment that happened my freshman year.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I love that. That's a good one.
It's pretty embarrassing. It's crazy that I can think back to that moment and know how I felt and how everybody saw it or everybody knew about it. I just became
And don't ever forget it.
Oh, no.
That'll always be that moment. That's a good one. That's a good one. Okay. Well, I am just so excited to have you here. You know, it's just a full circle thing. You know, I was your quote-unquote boss, lower on the totem pole boss, but your quote-unquote boss. So, you know, I saw you in your college days and just, you know, have been able to keep up with you and just see how you've grown. And I just have admired, you know, your bravery about sharing the things that you've walked through. And it's something that, you know, you hope nobody has to walk through, but it is your reality, but it's made you who you are. Absolutely. And a really strong person. And so you have a really difficult story, but I've always admired like your positive attitude and how you were always smiling and wanting to, you know, define yourself in your own way. So will you walk us through kind of the story of your mother first and kind of what that looked like?
Yeah. So growing up, I was really fortunate to be in a really strong household. Both my parents were involved in my life. We were, I would say, upper to middle class family. My dad had started his own company pretty early on in my life, and they were fairly successful. My mom worked for my dad. I was in a private Christian school from birth, essentially, until I graduated in 12th grade. So I went pre-K through 12th.
So you went the same school?
Yes. Yeah, which was really great. I look back and there are times, definitely growing up, where I didn't think I loved it, but I'm so appreciative that my parents started me in a private Christian school where I developed faith at a really early age. And looking back in my life now, some of my closest friends I still have today came from those times. Huh. And so I think growing up, I didn't really face much hardship. And I came to faith at 10 or 11 years old. And I remember praying pretty early on, God, do something in my life that will allow people to listen. Because I don't think if someone looked at my life from the outside that wasn't a believer, they would really see the need for faith, because nothing had changed in my life from the circumstances I had prior to becoming a Christian to after. Yeah. And so how would they look at my life and say, oh, your faith has really helped you in this area, because it's exactly the way it was. And so I started praying, God, do something in my life that will allow people to be receptive to the gospel, because I don't feel like I really have that. And so I got the answer to that prayer. It looked a lot different than I would have asked for it to been, but my parents used to race speedboats as a child. It was something they loved to do across the country. The money raised and those usually went to charities like the Make-A-Wish Foundation and various charities across the country. And it's something they loved to do together. They did it my entire life. And they left for a trip one September, like they had done year after year after year, up in Oklahoma. And when they were there, I got a phone call on a Saturday morning that my family was going to come over, and I thought that was kind of odd. Typically my extended family wouldn't just come over on a random Saturday. There was a male that was a family friend of mine that worked for my dad for years. That was really his right-hand man that usually stayed with me when my parents were out of town at that age. I was 12 going on 13 at the time. So I just remember sitting down, and that family friend ultimately was the one that came over to me and told me, hey, your parents have been involved in a really serious accident. That's really the extent of what we know right now. And so as soon as we know more, we'll let you know. But we just know they were involved in a collision with another boat. We know that people have been life flight to the hospital, and we don't know anything else at this time. So immediately my life goes from stable, not having faced really any hardship in my life, to I don't know if my parents are alive or not. And I don't know what life is going to look like on the other side of this. And so that next period of time probably lasted 30 minutes, but it felt like 30 days as they tried to find information on where my parents were at, if they were alive, what next steps would look like. And eventually they called around and figured out that in that accident, my mom was killed on the spot, and that my dad had been airlifted to a hospital in Dallas because they were life-flighting him to the ER, essentially to perform a surgery immediately. Mm-hmm. And so at that time, I'm, you know, having come to terms with the fact that my mom's passed away, trying to be thankful and grateful that my dad is still around, but also they didn't know if he was going to survive even overnight. So almost immediately I had to pack up a bag, get to the airport, fly out to Dallas because they wanted me to see him, thinking it could be the last time that I saw him. So all of this happens in the span of, you know, 5 minutes and someone explaining it to me. And again, life just as I knew it changed.
You're 12. Instant.
Yeah. And so how do you process those things at such a young age? I mean, being an almost teenager, a teenager is hard enough going through transitions of life. And now this immediate curveball that you try to put into perspective and realize at that time, it's going to change life as you know it for forever. And so I remember going out to Dallas and seeing my dad, and had people not told me at the time that was him, I would have never recognized him. I mean, there's just images in your life. Everybody can think back to some event where they know exactly where they were at and what they saw and what happened. And they tried to prepare me as best as they could for what it was going to look like to see him. But again, he was in a high speed collision chase at 100 miles per hour, not chase, excuse me, a high speed accident at 100 miles per hour. He was almost unrecognizable, but was so thankful I got to see him, and so thankful that he was alive. And so I was in that moment thinking, God, I don't know how you're going to use this time. I don't really know what this is going to look like, but I have to trust that there's going to be purpose in this and that you're going to find a way to use this for good. And so part of that was the Lord just putting so many great people in my life, whether it be family, friends. And I think it's so cool to look back in life and see how the Lord puts people in your life for seasons. And some people are in there for long periods of time, and some people are there for short periods of time, but they're there when you need them to be there. And I think that just goes back to seeing the faithfulness of the Lord in different stages of our life, because there were people that were just there for those handful of months when I really needed them to be there. And then the Lord had those people exit my life. But eventually my dad made a fairly full recovery. He was in the ICU for about 3 months, and then he was finally able to come back to Tennessee, where he was basically in home care for the next couple of months until he got back on his feet. But, you know, not only am I having to grip with the loss of losing my mom, he's having to deal with losing his wife.
And fighting for his life.
Right. And everything that surrounds that. So it was just a whirlwind of a time. And again, I'm just so thankful that the Lord put so many people in my life, and that I was at the school I was at where everybody knew everybody. So most of that school pitched in to help me get through, especially those really difficult early days. I just couldn't have been in a better environment during that time in my life. And I have no doubt that that was the Lord perfectly ordaining everything that needed to happen to get through that season.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I know that's not something easy to share about. So walk us through kind of what that next season looked like. You know, you said, you know, your dad ended up having a recovery, and what his season kind of looked like, and then what transpired through your high school years.
Yeah. So my dad and I, after my mom had passed away, had a pretty difficult relationship for the most part. He started dating about 6 months after he got back home. And at this point in time, you know, I've just crossed over 13th birthday. I'm in my teenage years. I'm navigating middle school while navigating losing my mom, while now having, you know, a single parent who's now dating. And it was just a very difficult time to try to process and understand and navigate what this next chapter was going to look like without my mom, because up until she passed, my mom was my best friend. I mean, she was Wonder Woman for not just me, but so many people in our lives. I mean, she was a homeroom parent. She was at all my ball games. I mean, she did everything for my family. When she passed, it was really the beginning stages of my dad's company, and he was at the office a lot. He wasn't at home as frequently as she was, and so she had to do everything for me in a lot of ways in those early days. And so my dad and I are trying to navigate a new relationship with each other, where he's now the only parent in my life and he's starting to date other people. And it was just really difficult to process at the time and understand and comprehend, you know, how he was able to move on in that chapter of life, knowing that my mom had just passed away. And there was obviously a lot of emotions on my end of what that was like, and feeling that there was someone that was going to replace my mom. And so I think that was just a really hard season for him and I, because he's trying to, you know, cope with the loss of his wife while also looking towards the next chapter. And I'm navigating being a teenager with having a father who's now bringing another female into my life. And so that time really was just a whirlwind as far as that aspect of it. But the other side of the puzzle, so to speak, was that I really didn't talk to anybody after my mom passed away. My dad encouraged me pretty early on when he got home to go talk to somebody, just looking into mental health and being able to process some of the things that had happened, because at the time I was a 13-year-old kid, and it's heavy for anybody to walk through, certainly at that time. And so I was really dismissive of that for the longest time. I think at that age, And at that time, in 2006, 2007, there was a lot of negative connotation around mental health and about seeing a therapist or a counselor. And I felt that the connotation around it was, you know, you were weak or you had something wrong with you if you needed to go talk to somebody, which couldn't be farther from the truth. But
it's a different time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm so appreciative and thankful for the advancements we've made in mental health over the years. Mm-hmm. I think we're in a completely different place than we were. We still have a long way to go, but I think we're in such a better place than we were back then. But I really pushed those emotions to the side and really tried to press forward with life without really taking time to process that loss and what that looked like. And so I would say really about a year after I lost my mom, I was just in a really dark place, probably the darkest place that I'd ever been in my life, where I was really struggling with depression at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was contemplating my own life and what that looked like and what the purpose was for me on the earth. I just had a lot of questions for God during that time of, you know, why me? Why my family? Mm-hmm. What's the purpose in this? If I left tomorrow, would anybody be upset to see me go? And I remember at night being up for hours, just bawling my eyes out as a kid, thinking, is this worth it? Is it worth it to move forward and go on another day? And I think there's only been one time in my life where I've very clearly heard the Lord speak to me. And it was the night where I really was at the end of my ropes and just needed something to change. And the Lord told me that this is the end. I mean, there's going to be purpose in this and this pain will be used for good. And so the next day I woke up and I told my dad, I said, I need to go talk to somebody. I need to be able to hash out these things that I'm walking through because I'm not in a good place. I'm really struggling with depression. And I still was hesitant to go, but I knew it was something I needed to go. And
how old were you?
13. And I'm so thankful that I did and that people pushed me to do it because I told myself I'm going to go one time and if it works, great. If not, then I won't go again. And it was just so helpful. And so I would encourage anybody that's going through a difficult season or thinks that they may find value in talking to a therapist to go, because I've done it multiple times in my life at this point. And it's just so healthy to be able to talk through things that you're struggling with or things that you're having difficulties processing with somebody who, one, is a very neutral party in the situation and doesn't know you or your past or what you're going through outside of what you share with them. And also someone that's just trained in that area. I think the times that I've gone, I've often been asked questions that I didn't even consider, or they've helped me to understand why I process certain things the way that I do because of things that I've been through in life. And so I ended up going probably 4 or 6 months beyond that. And it was probably one of the best decisions that I ever made for myself during that time. And really helped me get through that difficult season of depression and ultimately get to a place where I was in a much better state mentally.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing all that. I think actually, well, I know that that's going to help so many people because at some point in your life, you were going to have a very dark season. And, or if you haven't had a dark season yet, someone around you's having one. And you've got to know that it's okay to encourage them to get help. It's okay for you to get help. So I really appreciate you sharing that. So what happened at the end of your high school experience that really rocked your world?
So at the end of my senior year, we're coming up on spring 2016.
You were coming to Auburn.
Excuse me, 2012. Yes, 2012. Yes, I had already been accepted to Auburn.
Were you excited?
I was
in a good place?
So excited. My dad and I had still had difficult years between that time and 2006, 2007, up until 2012. My dad was engaged at one point in time, my junior high school,
really?
And that woman had two daughters herself. So there was the possibility of three women entering my life. And it was a crazy time, so much happening during those years. Again, so thankful for the community I had both at my school and at church. I just had so many great people and peers that helped me navigate through some really difficult times. And my senior year rolls around. My dad had called off his engagement that junior year. And so it was just him and I, and our relationship was at as healthy of a place as it had been since my mom had passed away. And I remember coming downstairs one morning and joking with him about how I was running late for school, but really my only motivation for school at that point was going to soccer practice, going to games, and then making Chick-fil-A runs for breakfast, because most of the classes I took that year were AP and dual credit, and they had ended at that time. And so really it was just checking the box up until Auburn came around in the fall. And so I saw my dad that morning on March 28th, 2012. I said goodbye to him. I joked. I told him I loved him. I left. I walk out the door and I get a phone call from the same guy who had told me ultimately about my mom passing away, and the same guy who had really been a right-hand man for my dad for all those years. He calls me when I'm at lunch that day and says, hey, you need to come home. And I asked him if everything was okay. And he said, you just need to come home. And I knew immediately in that moment, because I'd only heard this gentleman talk that way one more time, that it was something really bad, to the point that when someone was driving me back home to school for me to get my car, they asked, they said, what do you think happened, or what do you think's going on? I said, I think my dad either had a heart attack or slipped and fell and had a serious accident. I could just tell that something isn't okay. And so I get back to my car. I drive to my house back in Old Hickory. The way that our house was situated is you drove up a hill, and on the other side of it, down the driveway, was our house. And so I pull up to the hill, and as I start to look down, I can see the ambulance, I can see multiple sheriff's cars, and then that gentleman I was talking about stopped in front of my car, and he got in and he looked at me, and this is one of those memories again in moments that I'll just never forget what was going on or what he said or what things looked like in that moment. He just gets in, and for the second time in my life, he started to cry, and he said, it's just not fair. And I asked him, I said, he didn't make it, did he? And he said no. And I got out of my car and I ran to the side of this brush pile and just started bawling. I just couldn't believe that about 6 years after my mom had passed away, that I was now facing the reality that neither one of my parents were going to be around anymore. And I had told people over those years after my mom passed, because immediately everybody says, you know, how did you do it? Or, you know, how did you make it through this time? And I always tell people it wasn't me. I mean, I was at the end of my ropes. If it wasn't for the relationship I had with Jesus Christ, I would have taken my own life. I wouldn't have seen purpose in staying. And he not only provided the support, but put people in my life that were able to get me through those difficult times. But I told all of those people at the same time, you know, thank goodness that my dad made it, because I don't know what I would have done had I lost him too. And now I'm facing that reality where he's gone. And so I end up going down to my house. They sit me down, tell me, hey, your dad's taking his own life. And I just couldn't believe that, because I had seen him 2 or 3 hours before then and everything was fine. And he didn't express that anything was wrong or that he was struggling with anything. And like I said, my dad and I at this point in time had the healthiest relationship we'd had in 6 years, 7 years. And so after that, we discovered that his company was in a pretty difficult financial situation and that he just hadn't been very vocal about that to me or our family. And so again, in that moment, I was thinking, I don't know how I'm going to get through this, God, but I know you're going to make a way and that you're going to provide. And the first friend I called, my best friend from back home, I said, I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. I don't see how this is going to be used for good, but it's going to be, because I've seen the Lord's faithfulness at other points in my life. I saw that when I lost my mom, and I asked, how in the world are you going to use this for good? And he did. And so I just believe that he's going to do the same thing in this situation. And so after that, I was, you know, a month and a half from attending Auburn, and every material possession that my dad had accumulated over the years, I watched disappear. I mean, everything got impounded really just one by one. And it showed me that material things just don't have any meaning at the end of the day. You know, they're just things. And again, I go back to just being so thankful and appreciative for the friends and family I had during that time that helped me through that last month and a half, 2 months where I went off to Auburn. And I remember having a real serious heart to heart with the Lord one night. I was like, God, I've looked forward to Auburn all my life, but this really needs to be anything and everything I've ever hoped it to be, because I need a new start somewhere. I mean, there's just so much hurt and hardship at home, and there's really nothing to come back home to when I leave, because when I moved out of the house was the last time I ever went back to Old Hickory. And whenever I go back now, it's with family that lives in the surrounding area. But I was like, God, I'm leaving the only thing I've ever known in my life. And so I always wanted Auburn to be good, but now I need you to provide here in this time in my life, because I need a new start and I need new community and new people. And so I don't know how you're going to make it work, but I know you will. And I've seen you be faithful before, and I know you'll be faithful again. But it needs to be great at the end of the day.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you for sharing that with such, and I really appreciate you sharing that with such honesty, because just like you were, I mean, I'm so sorry that you have had to go through everything you've gone through. First off, like you, that guy said, it's not fair and life isn't fair. And I hate that this happened to you. But like I said, I just admire your strength so much. So you talked about how the Lord was faithful. I mean, your first phone call to your friend, you said, God's going to use this for good. I mean, who does that? And who is just, I mean, that just is such an answered prayer of like your, like you said, your faith and your strong, I mean, God. And so do you have any specific examples of how God has shown you blessings and comfort? You know, you talked about people being in your life in high school, but even as like life continued as well, you know, you said Auburn had to be this amazing thing. You know, what did God show you to say, like, I'm with you, I got you?
Yeah, I think one of those first moments after my dad passed away, we had a high school soccer game the next day, and my coach actually came over to the house that night to come see me. And he asked me, what can I do to help? He was my middle school basketball coach, you know, small school, middle school, high school, soccer coach, middle school basketball coach. I'd known him pretty much all my life. He said, what can I do? And I just looked at him and I said, Coach, let me play tomorrow.
What?
And he looked at me and he said, you're crazy. Yeah. He literally said, you're crazy. And he said, with everything going on right now, how can that be what's on your mind? And I said, Coach, when I'm on that field and I'm with these people I've known all my life, my closest friends, I don't think about anything else. I just go out there, play, compete, enjoy my time with my friends. And if anything, I just want 2 hours to be able to get my mind off everything that's going on right now.
Yeah.
And so he said, okay, we'll see if we can make it happen. So I went to school the next day because I couldn't play if I didn't go to school. So I showed up for school the next morning.
What?
Went through the day, got to that afternoon. We are warming up before our game, and my dad had purchased new uniforms and warm-ups for our team that season, and they hadn't come in yet. We were probably, I don't know, 3 to 5 games into the season. And so we're out there for our warm-ups, and our coach called us into our team room. So we walk back in there, and I'm not thinking anything of the situation. We sit down, and we're going over some X and O strategy before the game, and all of a sudden, our assistant coaches walk in with our uniforms and the warm-ups that had come in that day. And on that, there was always a plan to include my mom's initials on the sleeve of our jerseys. But overnight, they had called the people who made these jerseys and asked them if they could include my dad's initials too. And that all got done and all got completed overnight in time for our game the next day, less than 24 hours after the accident. And so that night, I was able to play, you know, a game in my senior season with both my parents' initials on my sleeve. I used to tape my wrist before both games with Philippians 4:13, says I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. And then I was able to put on the other sides of that the dates that both my parents passed away, which for my mom was September 2nd, 2006. And then my dad's was literally the day before on March 28, 2012, which allowed me to have so many conversations with people over the years about faith and the importance of it to me. And I played defense for a high school team, which if you know anything about soccer, defenders rarely score. I hadn't scored a goal yet that season. And during that game, I actually scored my first goal of the season the day after my dad passed away. And it was just in that moment, there was just so much weight leading up to that. I mean, as you can imagine, it was just such a heavy time. And there was still a lot of uncertainty about even where I was going to be living the next day. And I just, after that I scored that goal, it just felt like the Lord took all of that weight off my shoulders and was like, I've got you. You just need to trust that I'm going to make a way. And I turned around and hugged all my teammates. My coach is yelling at me from across the field. I go to meet him, and him and I just have a moment where we embrace. And he was a real stern coach. And so we had a little moment with everybody. He's like, all right, get back on the field. We got a game. Which was him.
And you wanted, that was probably perfect.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't have asked for anything more in that moment as far as just the belief that the Lord was going to make a way. And some people might say, I mean, you just scored a goal in a soccer game. How, what does that have anything to do with, you know, trust in the Lord? All I can say is that I felt up until that moment that I was carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders. And then after that, it was just gone. I just knew that it was going to work out. And I continue to see that faithfulness in my life from when I went to Auburn. I mean, there were so many things I wanted to do during my time in school. And I was so fortunate to do things like Camp Regal, where we were able to work together, and student recruiters and big event and student government, and so many things that allowed me to, more so than the things I got to do, but the people I got to meet along the way and the relationships that I formed and the mentors that I had over the years and doing those different involvements was just more than I could have ever asked for. And obviously not everything went exactly the way I wanted to, but it worked out the exact way it was supposed to. And I fully believe that the Lord had me exactly where I needed to be in those positions I needed to be in and the classes that I needed to be in. I changed my major halfway through school. My dad was an electrical engineer. And so that's what I was going to be. And that was always the plan growing up. And I got halfway through and I was not loving what I was doing on a day-to-day basis in school. And it weighed heavy on me. You know, if I walk away from this, am I giving up on my dad's dream for my life? You know, and I realized that my dad's dream, just like my mom, would have been for me to find something I loved and to be happy. And so I switched to industrial engineering through some conversations I had with friends I had met through involvement. And so I can just look back on my college career and see that everything happened exactly the way it was supposed to. Even if in that moment I didn't know why it was happening or how the Lord was going to use it, I can look back now years down the road and say, man, God, I'm so thankful that you had these things work out the way they did, because it was for my best interest, even when I thought my best interest was something different. So many times in my life, I've gone to God with a checklist and said, God, if you give me this, 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 and this, then life will be great. And this is the perfect scenario. And every time that I've done that, he's one, laughed at me for bringing him a checklist of what's best for my life. But two, he's given me a list better than what I thought my perfect list was. And so even up until graduation, I was so adamant that I was going to grad school and doing my MBA right away. I was going to Duke or North Carolina.
Yes, I remember that.
And that was it. That was the plan. And I get 3 weeks away from graduation and I just feel the desire and the need to apply for a few jobs. Just in case I decide not to go the grad school route or something changes, I just need to put my name out there. And so I probably spent 20 minutes researching online a few different places or jobs that seemed interesting to me. I applied for those jobs. It was just two at the time. I heard back from one of them. Originally, the job was in St. Louis. And I told them, I said, hey, you know, I really don't have any desire to go to St. Louis. And they said, okay, well, where would you be interested in? And I hadn't thought about Nashville because I wasn't quite ready to go back to Tennessee, but I still wanted the city. So I said, what about Atlanta? And then they called me back a day or so later and said, hey, we want to interview you for the job in Atlanta. And then two or three days later, I've got a job offer and just really felt that the Lord was telling me that Atlanta was the next move. It wasn't grad school for right now, that I needed to move and take that. And I mean, this is as I'm about to walk across the stage for graduation, essentially. And I spent some time praying about it and just, I said, okay, God, Atlanta was never in my checklist. It was never in my perfect scenario. I hadn't even considered Atlanta. I'd gone a few times in college for football games or to see friends that live there, but it was never on my radar as a place to live.
Yeah.
And then it was, all right, God, I'll go here for a year and then we'll see what happens. And then it was, okay, I'll finish this 3-year program I'm in for work and then I'll move. And now here we are at 5 years and I'm still enjoying it. The Lord has given me such a good community with church. I think it's just such a blessing that I've been able to form some really good mentorships and mentors of my own that have really poured into and invested in my life in the last 5 years. There's some really good and really bad times. I mean, time in Atlanta has been huge for my personal growth. I loved my time at Auburn and wouldn't change it for anything in the world, but I had my 4 years and it was ready for, you know, the next chapter.
It's good to be ready for the next chapter.
Yeah, absolutely. And there have just been so many blessings I can count towards, whether it be my job, whether it be the relationships I've formed, whether it be my church community that I have, a combination of that, my college career, and then post high school, where I can just say, and God, I couldn't always see it in the moment how you're working, but I can reflect back now and see that you are faithful in every one of those seasons of my life, whether I knew it or not. And even when I question God, what are you doing in this season, or how are you working, I can look back now and say, you were there every single step of the way.
Well, thanks for sharing that. I totally agree. I've been guilty of the checklist myself, like, hey, do this and I'll do this. Well, if you need this, I'll do this. And, you know, he just doesn't work that way. And I mean, I tell people all the time, I never necessarily even wanted to come to Auburn. I mean, I didn't know much about Auburn, kind of like you, like with Atlanta, you're like, I never really thought about it. But you know, when you walk in obedience, you are so blessed. And his plans are always going to be better. And so your life has had some pretty, pretty difficult times and moments, and also a lot of things you experienced at a young age that, you know, most people will never have to experience. So what do you think are maybe some of the most difficult moments that you've experienced in your life, and those difficult times that have truly shaped you into the person you are?
Yeah, I think off the top of my head, it's easy to say those 2 days I lost my parents, right? Mm-hmm. But I think more than that is the growth that's occurred beyond those days, yeah, and the milestones that they missed that make those things difficult. So, mm-hmm, I mean, neither one of my parents got to see me walk across the stage at my high school graduation, or watch me, you know, start my first day at Auburn, or graduate from Auburn, or get my first job, or move to Atlanta. And so I think a combination of all of those, that what's difficult about loss and grief is, I think people that haven't experienced it think that as time goes on, it gets easier.
No.
And I think the hard part about that is the day-to-day might not be as difficult, but the major milestones hit just as hard as the day that those events happen. I mean, I remember college graduation being so bittersweet, because I worked so hard for that day, and there were a lot of days.
Engineering ain't easy.
There were a lot of days I didn't know if I was going to make it, to be honest, mm-hmm, with you. I mean, praise the Lord that he put people in my life that helped me get to the finish line, because it was difficult. And I was thankful to have a lot of people around me smarter than I was and smarter than I am that got me to the finish line. But as excited as I was, at the same time, it was so hard knowing that they weren't going to be there, and that they didn't get the experience, that joy of that day with me. Same thing with when I bought my first car. My dad gave me my first car at 16. And then in the spring of 2019, it was time to trade it in and get something new. And I can't even put into words how difficult it was to what felt like give away a piece of him, because there's so few things that I have left in my life that were from them. And it was almost like I'm giving away another part of him. So those major milestones are just always so difficult. And I think like I said, if you haven't experienced it, it's just hard to understand. But in those things and through them, it's given me such a desire to be married, to have a family of my own, and to be the best husband that I can be one day, to be the best father that I can be one day, to always tell people in my life how much they mean to me, because I've seen how short life can be, and that when the last time somebody walks out of your life, you may not recognize that that's the last time that you will see them. I mean, with both of my parents, they were in good physical health. I had no idea that when my mom left that day, or when my dad, or when I left that day, that would be the last time that I saw them. And so because of that, I try to live a life of always letting people know how much I appreciate them and what they mean to me, because I don't ever want to live with the regret, one, of wishing I would have told somebody exactly how I feel, but two, them not knowing that they matter to me and that they've had a significant impact on my life. And so although I would certainly do anything in the world to have my parents back, I wouldn't trade the lessons learned along the way, because I really do think the Lord has used those to shape me to who I am today. And for all those reasons that I said, hope makes me a better follower of the Lord. It helps me better be a better steward of the gospel and to be a better, you know, husband and a father, if that's in the Lord's plans for my life one day. So I think the Lord often provides us growth in our life in the difficult seasons. It's not too often that we grow during good times, but during hard times is when we're usually challenged and stretched. And I think had I not experienced those events in my life, I wouldn't be nearly the person I am today. Mm-hmm. And certainly I would not have had the opportunity to share the gospel with people in the way that I have. I mean, there's been so many people, and that was the beauty of college and post-college, because in high school, everybody knew me because of the small area I grew up in. And so people knew my story, whether I shared it with them or not. But with Auburn and with Atlanta, I get to choose when to share that story. Mm-hmm. And there's really nothing greater for me to hear than people when I decide to share that. And then, oh, I would have had no idea that you had been through those events in your life. And that's what I want. I don't want to be defined as the person who lost both of his parents. I want to be defined as someone who loves Jesus and loves people. Mm-hmm. And that's a part of my story. And that's a part of my love for the Lord and for the gospel. But I don't want that to be what defines me. And I don't want people to feel sorry for me or look at me different because of those things. Because the reality is there's nothing that anybody on this earth could have done to change those events. And so because of it, will it always be a part of my life? Yes. Does it need to define who I am as a person? No. Mm-hmm. But it's opened so many doors that I never thought it would have. Or what I would have never pictured for the 10-year-old, 11-year-old girl that was praying for something to impact my testimony. And so many people, when they hear that, say, you know, how did you do it? How did you make it through that? Jesus, there's no other, there's no other answer. If it wouldn't have been for my personal relationship with the Lord, I tell people I would not have been here today. And he's the reason I'm here today. And if he can deliver me through the most difficult days of my life where I didn't see how there was going to be a positive outcome, I know he can do it for you because I've seen his faithfulness in my life and I know he'll be faithful again.
Well, to me, what you just said is the best advice you could give anybody walking through a difficult time of loss, loneliness, and hurt. Just, he did it to me, he can do it for you. I mean, I just admire your strength so much, and I appreciate you sharing that and sharing how it's so easy to thank God in the good times, but the hard times is where we grow, if we let God really show us that. So do you have any just brief advice besides basically what you said for somebody that is just really going through a hard time, loneliness, hurt? You talked about at a young age, you struggled with, is my life even worth living for? What would you tell somebody that might be struggling in that?
I think the first thing I would encourage people to do is find somebody. It doesn't have to be 20 people. It doesn't even have to be 5 people. Find somebody you trust that you feel that you can confide in everything, not just the parts that you want to share. Because one of the most beneficial things you can do for yourself in a difficult time is to be completely open and transparent about the good, the bad, the indifferent.
Yeah.
I think during those initial 12 months after losing my mom, I didn't do that. I put on a face and said things are great, and they weren't. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I started opening up and sharing those things. Now, that was with a counselor, but I also had friends I can confide it in. And so I think you can do both of those things, or you can do one or the other. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think you need at least one person that you can be completely transparent with. And I think as I got older, I became more transparent about that in my day-to-day life, where on the concourse at Auburn, it was very common to see someone say, hey, how's it going? I'm doing great. How are you? I'm great. And it was just really surface level. Even if you weren't, that was just kind of what you did. And I, at one point, just started telling people, hey, I'm having a bad day. And that really caught people off guard. But I think there's
authenticity
and like a closeness in your relationship with somebody else when you can just be completely open and tell somebody, hey, I'm not doing well. Because then it opens up the door for that conversation. And you would just be surprised how much good it will do you and how it'll bring you closer to somebody else if you're just willing to share the deepest parts of your heart with them. And so just encouraging people to seek somebody out. It can be one person. It can be 10 people. It can be a combination of your friends, family, therapists, but find someone who knows the full picture, because if you bottle those things up, it's just going to become more difficult over time. But also feeling that you can live out whatever emotions you need to live out when you're going through a difficult time. If you need to cry, let yourself cry. If you need to be angry, let yourself be angry. If you need to be happy, let yourself be happy. I just think letting your emotions run their course is really beneficial, because again, I suppressed those things a lot after losing my mom, and it's good to just be able to feel what you need to feel and let those emotions run their course, because that's part of healing. Mm-hmm. And if you allow yourself to do that, it's still going to take time. It won't be overnight. Mm-hmm. But if you allow yourself to feel what you need to feel, then it'll hopefully help you grieve and move forward in life. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for sharing all that. I know that's going to help so many people. So one thing you do share about is how suicide's affected your life. And that is not an easy thing to talk about. And probably something you never thought would be a part of your story. Like you said, with your dad, you never even knew he was experiencing anything. All this came out later. And so what makes you want to share about suicide and how, you know, mental health and how that's affected your life personally? And maybe how do you have to encourage others by showing how it affected you?
Yeah, I think initially having those thoughts, I felt a lot of shame in that, because it just wasn't a thought that I ever imagined for myself in my life. And the fact that my mind even wandered there was something I didn't want to confront, and I didn't know how to confront it. And I think unless you've been through those things personally, it's difficult to describe to somebody. You can't just snap out of a depression and be in a healthy spot. And so I was really hesitant for years to share that with my own family, that I struggled with those thoughts and contemplated my own life. But I eventually got to the point where I said, you know, I can be ashamed of this and not share it, or I can use it to hopefully help somebody else that may be going through a similar experience or going through a deep depression or a time in their life where they're contemplating their worth. And so I think the Lord has really provided me with the gift of being able to share my story and being able to be very open about the difficult days in my life. And I know not everybody has that comfort in sharing those. And so my hope is that by sharing that, people feel more comfortable being open and transparent about their own struggles with their mental health or depression or suicide, because we're not meant to journey through life in isolation.
No.
And community is so important, and being able to share with people difficult days and times and so forth. I mean, there's probably never been a greater time than this year of COVID where we've seen that we were not meant to be in isolation. No. It's been hard on so many people. And the loss of life we've had with depression, with so many other mental health issues that we've faced throughout the past year. But I think that if by sharing that difficult time in my life, I can encourage people to feel that they can have a voice and to feel that they can be open about their own struggles. And just to know that sometimes I would like to think of myself at least as a very positive and
you're
happy
very
person.
Positive and you're very happy. That's one thing, like you said, people are always surprised, like, oh, wow, you've been through these things, because your outlook on life is just inspirational to everyone.
And so that's one of the other major reasons I like to share it, because it's oftentimes the people that look like they have it the most together or are the happiest that are probably struggling the most. And so that's another reason I like to share, because you just never know what people are going through. And, you know, what you see is just the tip of the iceberg in people's life. You have no idea what they're going through behind the scenes. And so I just like to show people, hey, you know, it's not just your friends that are open about their struggles that are having difficult days. You need to check on your happy friends too, because they're probably going through a difficult time or have been through one, and they'd appreciate you checking on their mental health from time to time.
I agree. Just checking on your friends. Well, I'm almost speechless, because your story has always inspired me. And of course, you know, talking to you now, I've learned so much more about your story, but I appreciate your details and just, you know, you're the perfect example of God's faithfulness and the perfect example of using your story for good. He gives us all a story, and all of us have different stories and different circumstances, but you've used it for good. And I mean, you've helped so many people, and this episode is going to help so many people, because I mean, every day, like you said, I loved when you said just so simple, like day to day, you're like, this is what life is. Like, get away from that surface level life, because I feel like that's just going to be the sweet spot that's going to change the world. And so you're changing the world. And I want you to know, I know this is not easy to talk about. So I just appreciate you and your strength and your faith. It's awe inspiring. And I'm so glad that you were able to be here to share with us. And so you want to have some fun?
Let's do it.
Yeah. Okay. So I ask everyone this. Tell us three of your current faves, must-haves, recommendations you think the people need to know about.
So this has been a new hobby for me this year. And this one, I've tried to get more involved in reading books. I love to read articles, but I've always struggled with reading books. And so I set a goal for myself in 2021 as a part of some of my quote-unquote New Year's resolutions to read more often. And for me, that looks like 10 pages a day, which doesn't seem like a lot. But if you think about it, I set a goal to read 6 books this year. And so if you're reading a 300-page book, you should theoretically be able to read it in a month. Mm-hmm. Or if you take a day off in between, you know, you could still read a 300-page book every 2 months. And so I read Wild at Heart by John Eldridge earlier this year, which is a great book if you haven't read it, about being a Christian male and what that looks like in today's society. I just wrapped up a book by Kyle Idleman called Don't Give Up, which just has a lot of encouraging scripture about making it through difficult seasons in your life and, you know, leaning on the strength of people in the gospel who also face trial and tribulation. And so I just think it's such a good breakaway from a social media driven world and a technology driven world to take 20 minutes, 30 minutes a day to sit down and open a book. And it can be about anything or everything in the world. The first two I read were faith-based, but I plan to read The Answer Is by Alex Trebek. Yeah. So there's so many good books out there, and it's taken me way too long to get to this point, but I just think whenever you can, you know, break away, whether it's at the end of your night, you know, you're winding down to read a little bit, or in the morning to start before you get your day going, or whenever you have 5 or 10 minutes here or there, I would strongly encourage you. It took me way too long to jump on this bandwagon.
But you're on the bandwagon.
But I'm there.
You're doing it.
But I'm there. So I would encourage people, you know, 10 pages a day, it's really not that much, and you'd be surprised.
I need to get back to it.
So that would be my first one. My second one is that, and this has really picked up for me during the time of COVID where we've just had more time, is find a hobby in your life. Find something that you enjoy and that you love and work to get better at it. And so for me, I grew up fishing, but then I moved to Auburn, didn't really fish that much, moved to Atlanta, didn't fish at all. And me and a really good friend who I met, her here in Auburn, now lives in Atlanta with me, go every Wednesday. It's our Wednesday after work. We just take a couple hours and we go out to this pond and we just fish and we catch up. And so it can be anything, truly anything. It can be, you know, a sport. It can be, you know, learning an instrument. But I would encourage somebody to find something.
A weekly hobby.
Yeah, a weekly hobby that you can work on and get better at, and that you can enjoy time in community with other people with as well.
Wait, so are you better at fishing now?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
I got away from it for so long. I think it's kind of like riding a bike. You never truly forget. But at the same time, I was definitely rusty. It took me a little bit to get back.
But now you probably look forward to it.
Oh, yeah. I love it. We go every Wednesday as long as the weather's nice. And we tend to have a really good time. And so I enjoy it. I definitely look forward to it every week. And then my last one is very specific. But it's been on my mind a lot lately. And I highly recommend it for everybody. Next time you are in Destin or Panama City, you've got to go to the back porch.
Yeah.
And you've got to get the charbroiled shrimp with a side of hush puppies. And it will change your life. So next time you're in Destin or PCB, back porch, charbroiled shrimp with a side of hush puppies, it'll be one of the best meals you've ever had.
I'm going to a bachelorette party and guess where we're eating.
If you don't love it, I don't know what to say because I think you'll love it. It's that good.
I love the back porch. I haven't been in years, but I used to go on a beach trip with like some best friends from college every year, and every year we went to the back porch, but I've never had that. So I'm going to get it. But yeah, those are great recommendations. Thanks for sharing that. I agree. Hobby, I've got to get back to reading like I used to. And that's how I started reading. 1 year at the beginning of the year, I was like, I'm doing it. Like, you just have to set your mind to do it. So, well, I appreciate you being on Talk with Tori and all of just your wisdom and maturity and all that God's done with your in your life is amazing, and excited for you to go on to this next chapter and see what God has in store. So I appreciate you, Will. It was great to see you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Tori.
Okay, bye. If our episode today touched you, inspired you, or brought you some good laughs, we would be honored if you subscribed to the Talk with Tori podcast and left us a quick review. This will give others who are scrolling through the podcast apps the ability to find us. Please share this with all the people in your life so more friends can hear our stories. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope this episode brought you joy, love, and spice.